Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am joined by my buddy, Patrick Doherty. You guys probably know him as at RotoPat. That's where you can find him on Twitter. So in this episode of the show, we kind of just chatted, you know, talked about life in quarantine, chatted a little bit about The Last Dance, soccer coming back across the seas, how we expect sports to come back in the States, a little bit of Star Wars chat, you know, chatted a little bit about how disappointed we were in The Rise of Skywalker, who are the most interesting athletes, why is Mike Trout so boring, just, you know, a lot of topics here on the show. So hope that you guys enjoy it. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can always leave a rating and review on iTunes. Very easy, very simple for you to do, and I would really personally appreciate it. You can also support the show by subscribing and getting bonus episodes on patreon.com/takecast. That's very appreciated as well. Now let's go ahead and get into the show. All right, everyone, bringing in Patrick Doherty from rotoworld.com to the show. I think this is the third time you've been on, and you had a really funny tweet the other day, and I was like, all right, it's been long enough. We don't have tons of sports going on, so it's not like we need to have a super serious podcast. So I thought, whatever, let's get Pat on. Let's chat. How you doing, man?
I'm good, and I always love, because this is like kind of like one of my, you know, I have my dream job, you know, I've got my dream job, but you have like another one of my dream jobs, where you're like, you can be Mr. Independent Podcast Man, and you're like half independent, half, you know, you've got a real job too.
Yeah, I have a real job. This is just very luckily part of my real job. Like I do the fantasy stuff, and then they let me do this podcast on their podcast network as well as, as a favor to me, I think.
There are people out there, but yeah, I feel like in some ways we're like, we're very different, I'm sure, in a lot of ways. We're also kind of kindred, we're fellow travelers in a lot of ways, so I really like coming on the pod.
Well, yeah, we both live in a state that's about to be opened back up. I can just feel it, buddy. I can just feel that Missouri is about to get opened all the way back up. Like we are just, you know, we're 2 weeks away from Cardinals games, you know, like
you're in St. Louis County, right? I'm in St. Charles County, third biggest population center in the St. Louis metro area. And Davis, we were liberated 11 days ago. And I'm using that term very sarcastically. Hopefully everyone knows. And
who can say?
People have been taking advantage of their freedom. And I'm just crossing my fingers and really hoping that we're not shooting ourselves in the foot, that I kind of think we are. Because there was a lot of, I drove by a restaurant, an outdoor seating area, and it was just completely full. And I was just like, oh my Lord.
Yeah. Tough scenes. Ed. You know, I'm now like, you know, everyone wear masks. If you need to go to the store, go to the store. You want to go hang out with your friends in the park, go hang out with your friends in the park. You want to go golfing, go golfing. I don't understand the impulse of like, I'm going to kick the virus in its ass, right? Like F the virus, you know, that doesn't quite land with me. But of course, you know, I get the impulse of people being like, you know, I really would like to, you know, go back to doing things that I enjoy. Like, of course really, I understand that.
Yeah. I think I have a higher tolerance for it than most people, but I mean, even I'm feeling cooped up now. And it's just like, if just everyone wore a mask, I mean, wouldn't it be gone? And like, probably like a month or two almost, like because you know, obviously wearing the mask doesn't prevent you from getting it, but there's like all these studies that if everyone wears masks, like it spreads at like, I think it was like 1/12
or something. So again, what I always say on this show is don't get your information from me. Don't use, because I am doing the same thing you're doing, which is I'm like half listening to podcasts while I'm playing video games. Yeah. So like, don't listen to me. And it's actually someone just tweeted at me the other day of like, you said something on your podcast that was not true. And I'm like, you know what? I probably say things that are not true all the time, because I'm just a guy who's saying things on a podcast. Like, don't listen to me.
Yeah. But that's why you fact check.
Correct.
Not you, like your listeners. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Get it. If I say something you disagree with, one, of course, I will like, unless you're already muted by me, I will probably respond to you on Twitter because I don't have anything better to be doing. And, but anyways, the point I'm trying to make is, from what I understand, the mask thing is not necessarily so much to keep you from getting it if you're, because I think the way a lot of people get it is actually like you touch something that has it on it and then it gets on your hands and then you touch your face or whatever. But the mask helps you from putting it out into the world. It helps you from doing the getting the respiratory droplets out that carry the virus.
100% correct. Like, it doesn't really protect you from getting it, but so like I've seen studies, like if two people in a room are both wearing a mask though, then like the odds of it transmitting are like so much lower. And then too, just if you have a mask on, you won't be touching your face and everything. So
which is like from the beginning of like, you know, back in January and stuff when we were hearing about this, the first thing that we started hearing from the CDC and the World Health Organization is don't touch your face.
And like I get it with the mask, to be honest. Like I understand the machismo angle. Like it does look dumb in my opinion. Like I've been wearing
kind of makes me think of Bane, which to me is cool.
So like I've been wearing a mask this year when I mow the grass, not to like protect myself from germs, but like when I mow the grass, I'm always like really coughy and sneezy afterwards. And I'm like, you know, if there's ever one year to not unnecessarily inflame my lungs, it's going to be the coronavirus year.
Well, so yeah, because if you have allergies right now, you're going to be like, oh, that's it.
Yes,
I'm dead.
Exactly.
I'm dead.
So like, I wear this mask while I'm mowing my lawn for that reason. But then like when people like walk by and see me, I feel like an idiot. Like I understand like people not want it, but it's just like we got to get over it and we got to wear the masks.
So I think I've only been inside two places, like indoors. And one of the times was I went to go pick up a to-go order and I didn't wear a mask. It was like very early on in and I didn't wear a mask. And then the other day I went to this, the St. Louis people will be into this one. I went to Straub's to go pick up some chicken salad the other day. And I wore a mask in there and there were probably, I don't know, 10 people in there, whatever. And everyone was wearing a mask. And I was like, actually kind of encouraged. I was like, wow, I would have lost a bet. Cause I would have said, only employees, no people in here are wearing masks.
Yeah. Thankfully, there's a lot of COVID cowboys in this area, but thankfully inside the people have been masking up outside in crowded areas. You know, even outside, you know, I'm not going to like wear a mask when I'm like walking in the park probably, but crowded areas outside though, I'm not seeing enough masking up, but inside the message is getting through, it appears.
Yeah. I went golfing last weekend and I didn't wear a mask and I was like, I didn't feel like I was being a COVID cowboy. I was like, this is a fine and responsible thing to do.
I mean, you got the virus and you've already recovered. It was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I'm an asymptomatic carrier and it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Okay. On the subject of being cooped up, best TV series or movie that you have distracted yourself with during COVID?
Not The Bachelor show where they play guitars. I have been watching that one. If anyone else is out there, Bachelor, listen to your heart.
That's like one of the deals. That sounds terrible.
It's atrocious. So not that, you know, I had like, so, you know, at the beginning of this, everyone did make like, you know, I'm going to make the best.
Oh, yep. Big time.
Like, had all these grand quarantine plans and I thought I was going to be like really rocking, you know, the movie watching. And I just really haven't been. Same on the TV show watching. I watched a rated G Bean movie that I didn't know existed. If you want to know where my life's at sometimes.
Tough. Yeah.
It was a tough scene. But I've been reading. I've read. So, you know, you've got a book club going now, right?
Yes. Patrick Laird, our Laird, is going to come on the show. We are reading Uncanny Valley. That'll probably be like 2 weeks from now. I, however, though, much like you, I had a grand quarantine list of things I was going to do. And the first thing I was going to do is I've had Ulysses sitting on my bookshelf for, you know, 5 to 10 years. And I was like, I'm stuck inside. I shouldn't spend all my time watching TV. I shouldn't spend all my time playing video games. I'm going to read this frickin' book and I'm going to get over with it. It is 759 pages and I am 630-ish pages it if this was an easier to read book, I just would have read it so much faster. You know, it is a terribly painful read.
I've had an abortive start of Ulysses in my past. So I'm not quite sure. I was say the best thing I've probably read or watched so far. I have been reading the pandemic themed novel, Station 11, which I'm sure your viewers or listeners are probably familiar with. It came out in 2014, and it's about a much more lethal pandemic that wipes out like 98% of the population. And like society
is this like a science fiction novel?
It's not quite sci-fi-y. I mean, it's definitely a little science fiction-y, but it's not, no, it's like all like in the real world. So there's no like true science fiction element. And it's about like a traveling orchestra, like 15 years after this pandemic has like eradicated society, basically. Like they travel like by horse. Like it's just like about a post-pandemic world, and it's extremely interesting and fast. So I didn't really get far away from the theme of pandemics.
Okay, that's good. I mean...
documentaries for some reason. I watched a really great Martin Scorsese in 2011 did a 3.5-hour George Harrison documentary that was extremely good that I watched. I watched the famous Rolling Stones concert doc.
The live concert one?
Yeah, that was really good and eye-opening. And yeah, by and large, I have not been rocking the movie watching the way I planned. I've been playing, I was going to answer this, I have an answer to another one of your questions later in the pod, but I've unfortunately become a Madden player, and that's where a lot of the time has gone, if we're being honest.
Are you playing Ultimate Team, or are you just playing, like, online, like, single matches where you, like, take the Chiefs roster and play, like, you just play, like, straight up?
In between, I'm doing an online franchise mode with three of my friends. Kind of like
it.
The old days. Used to do that back in the day with NCAA, and none of us had played. This is really embarrassing. None of us had played in probably, like, 4 or 5 years. So we actually started out on pro, which don't laugh.
Madden is hard.
It's harder than, like, I guess I would consider FIFA to be, because I've played thousands and thousands and thousands of games of FIFA. But just to say, though, I'm to the point where, you know, I got good very quickly, and we still haven't upped the difficulty level.
And so you're just scoring, like, 60 points a game?
So I'm doing some, like, straight-up blasphemous things with Kirk Cousins. I'm the Vikings. I have like the 2 or 3 highest single game passing totals in NFL history. Just last night, he got 500.
Just mirroring real life.
Yeah. I was 2 yards away from the first 600-yard game in NFL history last night. I couldn't get a final possession. Steph Diggs,
terrible.
2,500 yards receiving last year. I supported 4 1,000-yard receivers.
Who was the fourth? Was Olabisi Johnson a must-add in fantasy football in your world?
I really wanted an elite 3-receiver set, and I wanted speed to spare, so I traded for Will Fuller. And
wow.
So it was Thielen, Diggs, Fuller, and Kyle Rudolph. I traded Kyle Rudolph, though, in the offseason. So I don't think the real Patriots would ever make this move. I dumped Kyle Rudolph on the Patriots.
Now they might.
We've got the Irv Smith project off the ground now, and I'm trying to have like a 1,500-yard season with Irv Smith this year. But yeah, it's been just...
I feel like you are not alone, because I have... So last time you and I potted, all of my video game attention, really for the last 3 years, all I've played is FIFA.
Me too. And the past 6 or 7 years, I've only been FIFA, and I'm still playing some. I'll let you finish. I'm still playing some FIFA, but yeah.
So I have ended my addictive cycle with this game. I literally quit playing it like cold turkey. Like you, and you didn't even play the actual addictive version of FIFA, which is Ultimate Team. I mean, Ultimate Team is it is stone cold crack. It is like slots, but with like a little bit of video game playing on the outside. I would not recommend anyone playing it. So, and the reason why I think it was so easy for me is I started playing MLB The Show, which is, and they, you know, they have their own card collecting game version. Yes. But because it's done by like a smaller company, and I think like it's not owned by EA Sports, so I think that the like the way that the
actual slot machine.
Well, they're not trying to make billions. Like they're probably happy making $25 million a year or whatever, instead of like this game has to literally, because the way FIFA works, FIFA actually pays for Madden. FIFA pays for NHL. They make so much money on this game, it pays for them to make these other games, and MLB The Show doesn't have these same requirements. So it's much easier to get, you know, a great team, great players, and it's just It feels like going from, like, you know, driving on the Autobahn in a Ferrari and, like, trying to, like, duck gut. Like, it is such a relaxing and enjoyable experience that I don't know if I'll ever play FIFA competitively again.
FIFA is so, so high stress. And yes. I don't even do Ultimate Team. So, like, I'm a 33-year-old man now. Before the pandemic, the extent of my in-person hangouts really were about
playing FIFA.
Too much. Once a week, we would get together in person, me and three of my friends, and we'd play co-op FIFA. We'd do two-on-two and just switch teammates, do like a round robin. So unbelievably fun. We're still doing that, but it's moved online, of course. But then to get better, I would supplement it with playing online, which is an extremely frustrating environment sometimes. But I'm really good at this year. I played like 40 games online and I only lost like 3 or 4.
That is impressive.
And I'm pretty good because I played seriously like thousands of games. We've been doing this.
I have too, but I'm still terrible at FIFA. Yeah.
I've only lost 3 or 4, but I've tied like quite literally like 15 or 16 games out of those 40. A lot of like 1-1 ties, but. FIFA, man, you just talk about a rage machine.
Like, it makes me so mad playing that game.
It is, but I've never been better at a game either, though. So like, it's hard going into Madden because like I feel like I'm like letting my FIFA skills slip. But what you gonna do? I love them both. I don't love Madden. I love FIFA. But Madden has been a very, very nice diversion.
Despite Madden. I think you can, like, the Ultimate Team version of Madden is, like, too much of a grind. So I like, pretty much every year I will play Madden for a month when it comes out, because I will, Matt Franciscovich, who works for their social department, used to work for NFL.com, works for EA Sports now, he will always hook me up with a copy,
copy 1 year, too.
Well, EA Sports always wins that transaction because I will dump $100 into the game to get sick cards at the beginning, which is, I mean, it's literally like, I mean, they EA Sports, they stay winning. They really, really do.
Even the part that's not, so I don't do Ultimate Team, but just even in the franchise mode, there's a lot of like slot machine type stuff going on.
There's microtransactions even inside there.
Yeah, there's a lot of like microtransactions that are getting the endorphins rushing for me. I'm gonna be a Madden man. I think probably 3 or 4 weeks. Then maybe close out the pandemic on a typical FIFA binge.
Have you watched the Clone Wars, which is like the Disney animated series of Star Wars?
I have not. I've never watched anything that wasn't a Star Wars movie, so I haven't seen like any of the animated shows. Like,
okay.
Books or whatever.
That's my quarantine recommendation to anyone, right? This is my quarantine recommendation to anyone who likes Star Wars, but you know, has grown, or anyone who really likes the idea of Star Wars, really loved the original three movies, watch the trilogy, watch the prequels, and was disappointed, because the Clone Wars is great. It's the best.
I've heard good things. I actually have heard good things. What is it on? I've been trying to not get Disney Plus because I have two young children and I don't want them knowing.
Really, really. If you have two young kids, I don't know if the trade-off is worth it, but it is on Disney Plus. They also have a show called Star Wars Rebels, which is also pretty good. And I don't know. I mean, I
still give them DVDs or Blu-rays and they like love it. They like think
amazing.
They think it's like the coolest thing ever. So I'm trying to keep that dynamic going.
If you can keep your kids from knowing about streaming for a couple more years, I feel like that'll be pretty big for you.
It has been big. My daughter's about to turn 4 and she still doesn't know that streaming. She knows like YouTube, but she doesn't know that there's like this whole world of Disney.
She doesn't know that literally anything she wants and likes is at her fingertips at any time.
We're trying to keep it that way too.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that you should. Okay, so we are about to have real sports. Actually, probably by the time most people listen to this, we will have had the first weekend of German soccer back. And you're a little bit older than me, so you've probably lived through at least 2 more waves of everyone saying, "Oh, well, soccer's going to be the biggest sport in the United States now." And I'm wondering if, depending on how Major League Baseball and the NFL, the NBA, the MLB. I'm wondering if how they play this may just actually turn Americans on to soccer, because we're getting the Bundesliga back. You know, the German league is coming back. Seems like the Premier League is going to be back on June 1st. Seems like the Champions League is, they refuse it. They're not going to cancel. It seems like they really want to make that happen. Are we actually at a point where soccer is going to be the most watched and most followed sport in the United States of America?
I do think it'll never be like the most watched. Well, first off, the person to put the project over the top is Erling Haaland on Dortmund.
Yeah.
He's like the man. He's going to be the man who puts the project over the top in America. But yeah, I mean, I've been hearing, like you said, I was 8 years old in the 94 World Cup.
Well, that was when they were going to take over. Yeah,
I was like already a big sports fan. And that was the first time I remember that narrative building. And, but I mean, so I would argue though, and you might probably agree with it, I mean, soccer has already arrived. It's not anymore like a matter of like...
The people who are like predisposed to like soccer in the United States already like it and already watch it. Yeah, I mean, like even before this, you could watch German Bundesliga games on American TV without too much difficulty.
Yeah, so like soccer has like arrived, and it's not just the people predisposed to it. I think it's become a very popular sport for like people like maybe put off by like the tribalism and cultdom of like, you know, American football or American baseball. And just from like anecdotally, like my friend group, soccer's become very popular with some of my friends like aren't huge sports fans. Like they view it as like a fun, safe, like entry sport basically. But yeah, I mean,
it's definitely viewed as like a little bit more cultured than watching pro football. Yeah.
I don't think it'll ever maybe be the number one. I mean, it could definitely be the number one, but I think if it's not already on par with like the four major sports, I think we're basically to the point where it's becoming like our fifth true major sport.
I mean, more people, I would imagine more people watch pro soccer than watch pro hockey in the States.
I honestly don't know. And NBC has the rights to both of them. So I should just go break into the office and like find the true hardcore ratings numbers. But yeah, I mean, so soccer, it's like the great arrival that was foretold forever, like has happened. But as you know, like still the huge problem is the MLS isn't the good stuff comparatively. So
yes, and
we're always going to have the time zone problems with like the Premier League and the Bundesliga. Like all the best games are still going on at, like 9 a.m. So that's something working against it. Like, I mean, to me, it totally, like, the Americans, we have to get on the
Euro. See, for me, the timing actually is great. Like, like having stuff done by 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, like, when you're a sports addict, for me, it just began as, like, you know, another sport to slip
in. To beat, that's on. Yeah.
So, like, that was how, that and FIFA were how it led to my soccer.
FIFA is what got me into soccer, yeah, for sure.
Me too. I'm like, it's 9 a.m. in the morning, and I have sports already. This is, like, the greatest
thing ever. Sign me up. Yeah, it's like Saturday for college football, but literally every day, because there's always soccer on in the world.
So I think that really helped it get the foothold. But for the final step to, like, become, like, a truly massive major sport here, I mean, I feel like you would have to have more traditionally timed games. And you know, Europe actually tries to make that sacrifice. The Premier League has started scheduling one or two games a year just for America. Like, I didn't know this. They've done a few games, like, just to get them on, like, way later in the afternoon in America. But, too, another thing working on is the MLS schedule not syncing up with the European schedule. Like,
terrible. Yeah. The MLS, this would actually be a great time for them to rectify it. They won't, but they should.
Because, like, well, the MLS is always going to be little brother. I mean, it will still be little brother even if we sync up the schedules. I mean, we have no prayer of competing for talent, obviously, as long as the schedule is different, in my opinion. And, like, they're going to have to eventually do that, sync the MLS up with the European schedule. And so, like, it's definitely established, like, a beachhead in America. But I'd say we're probably – if it was going to become the biggest sport, that's probably still, like, 20 or 30 years away, I feel like. Which, you know, isn't that long. But
right.
If I had to bet, even as a big soccer fan, I would still bet against it ever being like the number one sport in America. Baseball is just a friggin' undead zombie. Like, baseball will never, even if the NFL gets killed off by its injury issues, you know, like the NBA was, you know, NBA was soccer before soccer. That's been the meme for so long.
Yeah.
The
NBA has become
the biggest American sport. And just, I think people always underestimate baseball. Like the it's got such a local foothold.
That's the thing, is it might not, in cities where there's not a team, there's no market for it. Maybe no one cares, but people where they live, just like they love that baseball team.
Yeah. And like you moved to St. Louis last year, probably, right? And like the way the Cardinals capture like St. Louis's imagination for like 6 months is like unbelievable. Like,
yeah, it is. I mean, you see, I mean, the Blues just won the Stanley Cup, and you still probably see more Cardinals flags, Cardinals bumper stickers and stuff than you see Blues stuff.
You can never make St. Louis not a baseball town, but soccer. So yeah, like the Grand Soccer Project has already succeeded, I would argue. And it's now taken seriously. It's now a genuinely popular sport in America, but that's probably still a few decades away from maybe like truly vying for the throne.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean,
up the schedule, man.
They got, and they just like they gotta spend some more money, probably.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Well, they have more opportunities to spend if the cycle is synced up, because it just won't be.
The league has a salary cap, though.
I know.
Is the main thing is like they don't operate under the same rules.
No.
As the rest of world soccer, so just like what's the point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you can't have like a centrally owned soccer league. Like, it's just kind of ridiculous. Yeah. Not that it's not centrally, but it's not quite centrally owned. But it's so weird, man. Like, it's one of the weird disconnects between America and Europe is how socialistic our sports are and then how, like, just stark raving capitalist it is in Europe.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then, but, you know, their societies is like, you know, you can go to the doctor when you need to, and here, that's a coin flip. Yeah.
But, yeah, they have such a cutthroat capitalistic, like, you literally get relegated. I mean, it's just, like, so.
Yeah, like, literally, they're like, you're losing, like, half the people at this club are going to lose their job because you don't have any money. Have you watched Sunderland Till I Die?
No, and see, this is where I'm really dropping the ball on like pandemic television, because like, why have I not watched? It's been recommended to me.
Well, that you're not going to watch that with your wife, though. Like, same for me. Like, my girlfriend literally she just doesn't care. So that's going to be something I watch on my own, and like, it's not high enough on my list of media. Like, I watched the first season. I actually haven't watched the second, to speak in British parlance, second series.
Yeah,
if you will.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been come highly recommended by so many.
Yeah, it's really good.
I mean, there's literally no way I wouldn't love it. So I actually watched recently NBCSN, who I work for, was re-showing a Crystal Palace reality series from like 2015 or something.
Yeah, Roger Bennett did it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that was super interesting.
Really good. Yeah, I remember that one. Quite good. So actually, one of the main things I want to talk to you about, because I felt like you would have a good take on it, is while we're talking about media, Rise of Skywalker just came out on all the streaming platforms. You can watch it on Disney Plus and Amazon and everything. And I tried to rewatch it. I watched it in theaters with my buddies, because literally we've just always gone to see all these movies in theaters. And you know, you never know what reviews before the movie comes out are like, you know, they, like, people said The Last Jedi sucked and it was great. It was a great movie. Rise of Skywalker is not a great movie. There's like some redeeming qualities. Like, I think Daisy Ridley is great. But overall, it's just, Driver is good. Billy Dee Williams just chewing scenery as Lando is like, you can't ever get mad at that. It's just not a very good movie. Like, it undoes a lot of what The Last Jedi did. And I mean, you want to get the incels mad online. tell them that The Last Jedi was a good movie. But yeah, I mean, just it's just very disappointing when something you like just is that massively disappointing. Like, it's just such a bummer to me.
Yeah, so, like, I liked The Last Jedi. I was never, like, a Star Wars, like, super fan, but I, like, liked the movies. And I had seen, since I was old enough, I had seen every single Star Wars movie in the theater. But, like, this is the first, I still have yet to even see Rise of Skywalker. And it just seemed, everything about it seemed so deflating. Even the marketing, but even before the reviews came out, I thought the marketing seemed.
Yeah, the marketing, they were like, don't even see this if you don't want to.
Yeah, and, like, so it was the first Star Wars movie that I didn't even have the desire to see in the theater. And then, like, is this such a huge cultural event like ever faded from the public consciousness like so quickly.
So fast.
Like I felt like by like January 1st, like people were no longer even talking about it. And this is actually not a joke. I've had people tell me the ending once or twice and I've forgotten it both times. Like it just seems like such a low impact.
It's meant to undo basically everything from the first two. It would be like if at the end of Return, they were like, actually, Anakin was a bad guy, not redeemable, and like, and actually, the Ewoks were evil and on the side of the Empire, and yeah, like, just like it just is a supremely bad film.
So there's like a larger lesson here, obviously, with this and with Game of Thrones, was something I loved. Until
yes.
like where the temptation to do fan service is obviously so strong and to like check all the boxes for like the hardcore fans. But I mean, look what, like, it's just like, you cannot do, even like if it's a massive you need to still be trying to make art. And even if it,
that is such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like look at how just universally disappointed people were by Game of Thrones and were by Star Wars. And it's because they went into the finales trying to do box checking instead of just making an actual work of art. And it's really like pleasing to see this act. Cause like I was beginning to work, like we've already had like superhero culture, like subsume American movie making. Like so,
you know, what's so interesting is I just got bored and stopped going to those movies like halfway through. I think after the first or the second, there's four Avengers movies, right? I think around 2016, I just stopped going to them. You know, we all used to go, my friends, we would all go. And I think at just a certain point, I was like, you know, it's fine. I don't want to go.
The last one I think I saw was the original Iron Man, the one where Robert Downey's like in Iraq or something. So
that is just, that was like the first one.
Yeah, so that's another thing where maybe our age difference comes into play, where I'm like just enough older that I just got like, I was like,
yeah, you missed it. You missed it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but it's just like, again, I can't cast aspersions on anyone like superhero movies. I'm a fantasy sports professional. Let's just get that clear. Like my life is
right
about fake football. So I'm not casting judgment, but just like with the superhero movies and stuff, it's just me like, you know, when the stakes every movie is like the end of the world, like the fate of the world, then there are no stakes because obviously, you know, like the world's not going to end, which is kind of a silly point to be making. But I just could never get into something that to me felt like it had no actual stakes because, you know, obviously I know, I guess they do die in some of the movies, but now there's
some of them die, to my knowledge.
But yeah, you know, it's just like, it just wasn't for me. And I hope that like Hollywood learns a lesson from Game of Thrones and Star Wars. Like, obviously, you can still try to make a ton of money, but like fan service just like isn't the way to go because it's just going to end up disappointing everyone. And if you at least like end up taking a moonshot like The Last Jedi, you'll anger a lot of people. But I mean, a lot of people loved the last, and it was so much better reviewed. It's from everything I can tell, it's a far better movie. And
Last Jedi is a good movie. Like, yeah. Mark Hamill is great in it, Adam Driver is great in it, Daisy Ridley is great in it, says a lot of meaningful things about the series, and people didn't like it because it cast some aspersions on the characters from the original films, basically.
Yeah, you will be rewarded for, like, trying to make an actual story, and, like, even in 2020 America, people don't want fan service 24 hours a day. Even if they think they do, they don't. And you got to try to make an actual movie and not just go through a checklist.
You got to try and make an actual movie. Really, really, really.
Groundbreaking advice, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true, though.
Like Bob Iger writing this down, try to make an actual movie. Like, very interesting.
So give me your take on how do we get sports back, or likelihood of sports in 2020. And if like, okay, here, great. Week one, NFL 2020. I mean, obviously I think everyone's given up on fans being at the games, right?
That's like the baseline, obviously. You have to accept no fans. Like
no fans. Week one, 2020 NFL, happening with no interruptions. What's your line?
Man, so, you know, this is like so morally fraught, obviously, because there's so many, you got health issues at play. You know, we know owners in every sport take advantage of the players monetarily. I think so far of any of the sports, though, I have to say there's still huge holes in the plan. But the MLB plan, to me, is the most realistic so far.
Yeah.
The bubble thing can maybe work for a postseason. So, like, maybe the NBA can get away with like.
Yeah, but 3 months?
Yeah, like too during much, the pandemic, probably. It was like a non-start. You could see why it was just a total non-starter for the players to do a bubble. Like, you don't want to be away from your family for 3 months during, you know, the
global. When one of them might get COVID and die.
Yes. So once the MLB acknowledged that, okay, this actually needs to be in our home stadiums, that was like the first, like, kernel of an actual plan I felt like I saw from any sport. And it's just tough. Like, I think it does need to come back. And I think both sides probably have enough financial incentive. But I just can't – I feel like baseball has answered every question, except for no sport, including the NFL, has answered the question of
what happens
when a player tests positive. Like, do you quarantine – because if you go by the CDC guidelines, then you're going to have to quarantine the entire team, you know, for 2 weeks. And that is just the scary part for me for any sport, is that – no one has answered that central question yet. Baseball, I feel like, has gotten so close, but no one has answered the central. And the NFL, I'm sure they're doing actual planning behind the scenes, but like the NFL is still like just kind of like relying on like raw displays of power, I feel like.
Yeah, they're like, we're announcing the schedule and it's fine. And that's the schedule and it's fine.
And like, you know, it's doing the draft like normal, which ended up going fine.
But I thought the draft was a welcome respite from, you know, just thinking about death.
But I mean, there's no good answer yet. Cause I mean, I guess one just doesn't exist. I mean, the leagues are going to have to admit basically, like, if a player tests positive, we're not shutting down the whole team for 2 weeks.
We're not shutting down. It's just like, I guess you just say, you know, Quan Alexander, you know, you gotta like, go
how
home.
Do you square that with the player? I think the players though, unfortunately, not unfortunately, I can't cast judgment on the players. I think eventually the players are going to accept that risk. And because, you know, like, it is very easy to look at this from like the owner exploitation of view, which they are trying to exploit their players. But I mean, at the end of the day, the players do not want to lose, you know, 100% of their salary for a whole year. It's just like, as bad as it is.
And they don't want to make the revenue share. I mean, the revenue share for these leagues in terms of TV deals and, you know, just like sponsorships and everything, like the money pie for baseball, for basketball, for football. If they miss a year, no one wants this. You know,
it's like almost unthinkable. The long term damage. I mean, the long term damage is already going to be like difficult to predict. Like, we probably don't truly understand. This is going to transform sports in ways we probably don't understand yet. Even if they do come back, I would say so far. As much as you can have a responsible COVID plan, the baseball plan of, you know, 82 games, no fans, geographic-based divisions is about – if you can have a responsible COVID plan, I feel like baseball is as close as anyone has come so far. And the NFL, you know, if they have a responsible plan, they're, like, keeping it under wraps because they just, like, seem like they're
basically – they don't want anyone to steal it.
Yeah, of course. They just still kind of seem like they're in, like, hope-it-goes-away mode.
Hope it goes away by September, or hope that people don't care by September and that they won't be viewed as like morally wrong or ambiguous for just doing their thing.
Yeah, I was very like, why did the NFL not like put all the non-conference games at the beginning? I didn't understand like why they didn't give themselves more schedule flexibility. It was just like a weird pointless flex, I thought, from the NFL. Like, they should have just made all the non-conference games either at the beginning of the schedule or the end of the schedule, so they're super easy to lop off. But they didn't do it, and I don't understand why.
Maybe they just are hoping, right? Or maybe they just think that, you know, they will, there's certainly a very real possibility of by September people just don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we're already getting there, it seems like. I would say the one sport that is truly screwed is – I do not think we will see college football this year.
Because you can't make students play if there are no students on campus.
Regular students aren't coming back. You cannot make these football players come back. It's obviously just madness. I think college football is screwed. I think the rest of the four sports.
I think colleges might be screwed, by the way, because very many of them are just institutions to be powered by the football teams.
Yeah, it's just too painful to like even think about some of these problems. And yeah, the higher education system in America, it's gonna have a lot to reckon with.
I saw some conjecturing the other day that. Community colleges and, you know, mid-size universities and stuff like that, that basically, like, there really is no path for financial recovery for these institutions of, like, if they miss a year of enrolled freshmen, basically.
Man, I know. It's, yeah, I mean, you can understand why it would be so ruinous. And, like, you can also understand, like, there, you know, a lot of them are going to try to charge full tuition, you know, even if it's, like, learning from home, but, like, it's just like there's never been anything in American society in our life that had so many questions with no good answers. There's like no COVID conundrum like has an easy answer. Like they all just have like these like escalating series of like less bad options.
Like, like every node you go through in the decision tree, it's just like you think you've solved it, you're met with like another like impossible dilemma to also try and solve.
Yes. Really, really. I've said this. Please, God, let 2020 be the most interesting year of our lives going forward. Like, if we're going to have long normal, because, like, if there's
It's sort of like a running back that loses his juice, though. Like, do you really think we're putting the lightning back in the bottle? Like, it seems like from this point on, like, things can only, escalate to a further and further, more ridiculous level of existence.
I mean, I've seen people posing the thought exercise of what if 2020 is the best year remaining, and do not want to think about
that. I mean, if you put everything on a chart, right? A linear graph. Things are certainly headed in one direction since let's go like 1980, right?
I will say, humanity. We usually this is not the first time of like. Constant crisis in human history.
Yeah, crisis and warfare and that's true.
Usually get it corrected. Even in America, I mean, we've had so many horrible existential problems. Like, eventually we usually like lurch towards the right path and option. And it's like our generation, I guess, not just our generation, most of the post-World War, not to like lionize the World War II generation, but we had dealt with fewer existential crises than past generations had. Like, it's not that we hadn't dealt with any, but it's almost like we got bored and like decided we had to like test ourselves. And now we're like, oh yeah, things can actually get super shitty and bad. And like, we need to cherish when things were boring. And that was really stupid to say, elect this person for no reason. And, yeah, I don't know.
The 90s. Like, go back and watch, like, 90s sitcoms and, like, look at the problems that people were having and, like, the things that they were talking about. Like, everyone was just bored in the 90s. Like,
watch
like,
The Last Dance.
Yeah, central plots of movies were, like, I'm bored in my job.
Yes.
Like, that was, like, the point, you know?
Yeah, it's like, as a whole collective, we, like, had to touch the third rail for some reason. Like, oh, yep, actually did... shock me horribly. Never do that.
What is the Rotopat branded take on The Last Dance? As of right now, we are heading into episodes 9 and 10, so the finale. We just got done with episodes 7 and 8, so Jordan retired, Jordan came back, and they are headed to go win his final championship. Have you enjoyed it?
Don't spoil it. You just spoiled the ending.
Yeah. Yeah. Shit. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, talk about crack. Talk about like a slop. To me, this has been like one. And this is like another thing. I might be just old enough. Like, this has been maybe the most, not even kidding, the most powerful nostalgic experience like I've like ever had. Like, from like
a yeah.
Because like, I was like any other kid growing up in the 90s. I was like obsessed with the Bulls. The only time in my life I ever rooted for the favorite. Like, I was obsessed with the Bowl. Like, reliving all this has been, like, getting the endorphins just really, really, really going. And, you know, so many, I had never wavered. I have always said Michael Jordan was better than LeBron. And like, to me, I still feel that way. So like, obviously the level of competition has improved. Like the athletes have just skyrocketed in like nutrition and training and all that. Like when I watched the last day, I still feel like the only person I see making anywhere near like these kind of moves that Michael Jordan made is maybe like going to be like Zion Williamson. Like the first Zion, LeBron.
He gets so high, right? Michael just jumps so high that it seems like that seems just like something that will just translate. Yeah.
Like, I think like people, you know, when they bag on Michael Jordan, like say, like, you know, he's playing against car mechanics and plumbers, which isn't true. Obviously. Well, they were pretty skilled. I mean, but he has a level of obviously you don't become like one of the greatest. So both LeBron and Michael Jordan, I think we have to accept, have athleticism that would probably translate in any generation. Like, if you're truly that special of an athlete.
And, like Michael didn't play baseball for 14 years and then went and hit 200 in AA, which is, like, a feat that no one, like,
yeah, I mean, absolutely, you know,
Kevin Durant's not going to hit 200 in AA right now.
To get off the bus and hit 200 at AA at the age of 31 is, like, actually insane. And again, like people like Michael Jordan, if he played today, he would shoot way more threes. You know, that's another thing. Like Michael Jordan, like he would adapt. But I just he was just a freak of nature. And LeBron is certainly on the same level. But I like in terms of like just like true like hops and like hanging in the air. I feel like I've never seen anyone quite like that except for Zion Williamson's like the first person I've seen that almost reminds me of like the way MJ could just like hang in the air.
Yeah, I mean, that's as someone who's like, you know, only sort of known, like, I mean, you know, I was not alive for any of the MJ stuff, but, you know, just known him through like boomers being like, you guys, you don't know, you weren't there. It's been great. It's been great to watch and to know and to get, you know, some sense of the story. I mean, some of the stuff is like, you know, very annoying, right? Some of the Michael Jordan worship, I'm like, great, whatever. Like, and I mean, you know, now we're getting the take of like, you don't understand. Michael was this white, you know, and it's just like, no, Michael Jordan was great and he needed to be like this to hype himself up. But no, like a manager at Dillard should not behave this way to his employees. And like, I feel like there's a lot of people that are missing that disconnect.
No, I know. Yeah, it's a good thing that era of like the win at all costs. So like LeBron is like the perfect natural evolution of Michael Jordan, freak athlete, like consummate winner, quote unquote, but doesn't make everyone around him feel like shit 24 hours a day. So that's
he only like sends snarky tweets about them like once a season to get them. Yeah. Fit in, don't fit out, you know?
But I will say too, I'm going to go full boomer. It is a little probably hard to understand if you didn't live through it. Cause, like the 1993 NBA finals were like a big bang, like sports moment for me.
Yeah.
I was 6 years old and like, that was like a true holy shit moment for me. Like seeing like the first time, like really watching and like understanding and remembering Michael Jordan. And like, it is truly, the documentary's done a pretty good job of conveying, but like, it is hard to understand like just how big Michael Jordan was like in the monoculture. Like LeBron is huge. Like there's just not even possible.
Yeah, but monoculture doesn't even exist now.
Exactly. It was the last gasp of the monoculture. And that was like another thing LeBron has working against him in the quote unquote debate. It's just not even possible for LeBron to get, LeBron has gotten absolutely massive, obviously, but you can't like get as big as Michael Jordan did in the 90s just because it's not even possible.
Anymore. It's not even possible.
He was like so all encompassing. That it is like, it's like hard to understand if you like weren't there for it.
I would argue the only two athletes now that are really monoculture are Tiger Woods and Tom Brady. I think those would be the only.
Tom Brady even monoculture? Like it's, I wonder.
Yeah. You think my grandma would know who Tom Brady is.
I guess my mom would know who Tom Brady is. I don't know.
That's to pass the test. Your grandma has to know who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everyone's grandma knew who Michael Jordan was. So
yes,
yeah, you know, the monoculture is both good and bad. It's probably mostly good that it's faded a little bit, and it would be nice as a culture to have more shared collective experiences, though.
Sure. So, Tom Brady, is he dust?
Man, this is going to be like the most annoying exposure of all time. So I feel like he's just going to expose all of us who I never passed up an opportunity to tweet about Tom Brady being done last year. And I do think something physically just looked different last year, but I guess it's inarguable that, I mean, he really did have his worst supporting cast in years. And now he's got like this nuclear weapons grade supporting cast. And I wouldn't be shocked if he's savvy enough and hasn't just enough left physically to take advantage. Cause I'm already feeling myself having like Tom Brady be like my preferred like QB2 flyer. You know, if I'm in like,
you can't even get him there though. In early drafts, he goes like early.
Yeah. But I feel like he kind of started out like the 10 to 14 range, but yeah, he's creeping up to like the 7 to 8 range. And, I don't know. I'm very conflicted about this because, like, I thought he was done last year, but now I already feel myself, like, wanting to draft him, kind of. And I'm afraid he's going to get, like, one.
You're a true believer. You're just like, Brady, that's my guy.
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like he's going to make
Tom it. Terrific.
I just feel like he's going to make it work somehow, and it's very frustrating. I mean, it's going to be fun, I guess.
I mean, it's not even somehow. Like, he's been given – this will be the best offense he's played with since the Moss teams where he's got...
It really will be.
Yeah, he's got Mike Evans and Rob Gronkowski and Chris Godwin and O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. And, I mean, even Justin Watson and Scotty Miller would have been starting wide receivers for the Patriots last year, probably. Yeah. Like, those guys are probably better than Philip Dorsett, so...
Philip Dorsett bad. No offense, Philip.
Yeah, he's going to fit in perfectly in Seattle. They love bad wide receivers. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think
I'm just tired. Like, I don't, nothing against Tom Brady personally, but I'm just tired of
him.
Like, 2 decades is enough, man. Like, it's just even MJ friggin' retired twice. You know, you gotta have people breathe a little bit.
Have the decency to not overexpose yourself, Tom. Yeah. I mean, he seems like the most likely guy to just be like literally like go play in the CFL or something because he literally can't stop.
I know. I mean, he honestly, I actually started to take him at his word that he's going to be doing this till he's like 46 or 47. And
I think he would love to play quarterback at 50 years old and be like, yes, I'm starting for the Cincinnati Bengals. Yes, I'm 50. what with any further questions?
Who would you rather have win the Super Bowl, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick this year? Obviously, the answer is neither, but if you had to choose.
I would rather Bill Belichick.
Yeah, 10 times out of 10. I was just making sure.
I
mean, it would be so
fun. I hate both of them, and the thing I hate most about Belichick is that he just will always pretend to not be into analytics. And it tilts me to no end to have him be like, what we only care about – good football players and effort. And like, you know that they like invented NFL analytics.
You have to admit it's a good bit at least.
Okay. I will admit it's a hilarious bit for him to be like, what? We don't even have computers at the facility. But like, I mean, it's clearly, it's lies, right?
No team in professional sports in America has probably embraced analytics as much as the Patriots have.
They're just lying. Yeah.
It is just a straight up lie.
And another thing I hate is how every year they will just force some Gunnar Olszewski character on us, you know, some D2 cornerback converted to, you know, it just
yes.
that tilts me. But I mean, I like Brady way less. Like, I'm just like, I don't like that guy at all.
That's something I've been thinking of. Watching The Last Dance, actually. Isn't it stupid? I hate, like, you know, we always need to give credit to the players. But, like, so I don't like comparing Bill Belichick to an all-time great player. But, like, the person who does remind me the most of Michael Jordan is Bill Belichick. And it's because of just, like, the abject ruthlessness. Like, is just – it's a very – thankfully a very rare quality. But Bill has it as very much on every level as Michael Jordan did. And just like a searing ruthlessness, and his is presented much differently. But I mean, he is as ruthless as any sports figure who has ever lived.
This is actually a good transition point though, to our last talking point, which is who do you find to be the most interesting athlete? For me, it's Kevin Durant, because I can't imagine being that rich and that famous and still wanting to spend that much time on Twitter. But I mean, you know, for other people, it could, you know, could be, you know, maybe they don't think that's interesting. Maybe they're like, hey, Kevin, get a life.
I mean, Magic Johnson gave up a GM job to spend more time on Twitter, as we know. It can be a very powerful.
That is true. He did do that.
The most interesting athlete is Erling Haaland of Borussia Dortmund. He is one of the more.
Yes.
I honestly think, again, I'm going to circle back to another theme. I honestly think it's Zion Williamson. It's like the new. First off, we have to. Zion Williamson made people root for Duke. Like Zion at Duke, like that was becoming appointment viewing. Like the way it really, I was feeling things, like, just like hearing like random people talk about Zion, like the way I hadn't really heard people talk since like MJ, Tiger Woods, kind of like normal people like were kind of like holy shitting at Zion Williamson, and I think he definitely has the potential to be like the next like central figure of American sports, because you just like. He does things that, like, I've just never seen an athlete do. And, like, it also helps, like, he, like, never misses a shot, question mark.
Yes. It helps that he's extremely good.
He's just insanely gifted and insanely good. And I think the, like, of any young athlete right now in America, he might have, like, the strongest, like, to me, he's the most interesting and, like, probably, like, the next, like, true big thing.
I think that is, I think that is very likely to be true. I don't know. I guess to that point, though, I don't know much about him, like, as a person or anything.
Yeah, I don't either. But, too, that's another thing. To, like, be that good at a sport, you have to be, like, so smart. Because, I mean, there's been plenty of people, like, Zion Williamson's athleticism. Not plenty. I mean, it's a truly rare level of athleticism. But it's another, like, people that, like, don't understand about so many of these athletes, like, to be like LeBron James is like literally like Mozart. Like to be that good at something physical, you have to be so like outrageously smart. Like you have to basically be a genius. And so like I'm assuming Zion Williamson is extremely smart if he's this good at basketball. It's like so many people, not so many, but people get that level of athleticism, but then to pair it with like genius is like what makes them like so incredible. And so I'm assuming Zion is a very smart guy. Like MJ or LeBron.
Well, hopefully we know. Hopefully he becomes, hopefully he becomes one of those guys who tells us more. Who tells us more about him as things move on. I don't know. He could go the other way, right? He could just be behind. Like I don't know that much about Russell Westbrook. I find Russell Westbrook fascinating, but I don't know that much about him as like a person, and maybe Zion
Russ
goes that route.
Russ is a truly fascinating person.
Yes.
Fascinating persona.
Yeah, I love that dude.
Yeah, he's a one of a kind too.
All right, man. I think that that should cover what we got. You got anything else?
I don't really. So when you're thinking of fascinating athletes, like all I could really think of, like, soccer or basketball, which, like...
Yeah, no football players. No baseball players.
Do such a horrible... Like, they need, like, letting your players be outspoken and, like, do what they want. Like, that is, like, actually the way to, like, get a figure like that. And neither baseball or the NFL, like, really allows that. And, if you want, like a true, like, cultural phenomenon... You need to, like, let them be themselves. Like, the NBA does such a good job of that. Soccer does such a good job of that. And, food for thought.
Every time this conversation comes up on Twitter, someone will tell a story about how they saw Mike Trout out somewhere and he was just being a guy. Like, he was just, you know, getting gas or buying groceries or picking up a prescription. Like, and no one bothers him because no one knows who Mike Trout is. He's probably the best baseball player ever. And he can just go out and be unbothered.
It is weird. I don't really understand, like, the Mike Trout phenomenon. Like, why he's not bigger. I mean, I guess it really is just as simple that he's on one of the most anonymous pro sports franchises in America.
And no one cares about – no one cares about – baseball is not that watched by people outside of their markets, and he plays for a bad baseball team.
But yeah, he could be, like, a bland, like, humble figure, though. But I guess, yeah, if he were a Yankee, he would be probably a much larger.
He would be more pop, like,
yeah.
I would think maybe just more raw people know who Aaron Judge is.
I was going to say, I was honestly going to make that exact same point. And it's true. See, Mike just didn't get the franchise luck of the draw. Maybe he did. Maybe he wouldn't be as good if you're on the Yankees and under the Mike.
I mean, maybe he just enjoys being anonymous, right? Maybe he's just like, that's...
Yeah, he does. Know. Clearly he does. And you can't make someone be something they don't want to be.
Yeah, for
he
sure.
He would have no choice if he were like in New York or Philadelphia or Boston, though.
Yeah, like more people know who Bryce Harper is. That is undoubted.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
And Bryce Harper is like the 80th best hitter in fantasy baseball. Like no one cares.
It's talking about another strange guy. He's got the personality too, though. I mean, Bryce is like the
Harper is like a more interesting guy.
Yeah, he's like one of the more interesting baseball players of like the past 20 or 30 years, where he has like an actual personality and unvarnished opinions, and you know, really long hair.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't go full Trevor Bauer on us. Trevor Bauer,
please God, don't. Yeah, seriously, just don't, Bryce. Just don't do it.
Yep. All right, man. Thanks for chatting, everyone. Thank you for listening. Check out all of Pat's stuff over on Roto World. Follow him on Twitter @RotoPat. Retweet his funny tweets, and we'll be back soon.